Welcome into the PFN Bengals podcast. I'm Dallas Robinson. He is Jay Morrison. Jay, draft is coming right up, 1 week away. We've decided to open up the Bengals mailbag to try and answer as many questions as we can from our listeners this week as we possibly could. And thank you to all the listeners who submitted questions on Twitter, on YouTube, and DMs. We've got a ton of stuff to talk to, so we will dive in here pretty quickly. But Jay, how's everything going? How was talking to the Bengals coaches and players at the offseason workouts yesterday? How's your week going so far?
Yeah, it was great getting back and seeing some of the guys and talking to them. And it's a little different. I don't know for those of you out there who are aware, but they are totally gutting the Bengals locker room. They're shipping in brand new lockers from Texas. They're doing all kinds of other construction right now. So not only are they not in there now, the deadline is close to they might start the season in these auxiliary locker rooms, which is going to get really interesting. But the ones they're in right now are very small. It's very cramped, very tiny, but nobody seemed too upset. The offensive and defensive linemen are in a separate locker room from all the other guys. And I had heard where some of the offensive linemen were asking, where's the media? Because they knew that we were going to be there that day, but they had kind of had different schedules and we all went into the other locker room. So they were ready for us. Everybody seemed to be in a good mood. It's that stereotypical first day of school where, everybody's just glad to be back and see each other. And they were actually kind of warmly greeting the media, which was good to see. We'll see how long that lasts. But it was good. It was good to be back and felt like, you don't feel like football's right around the corner, but you feel like you're progressing towards it.
Yeah. It sounds like they missed you, Jay. That's what I'm getting. It sounds like they missed you. They were happy to see you. That's great. I love to hear it. But yeah, it's everything is right around the corner. It does feel like we're on the precipice of something, and yeah, we are. I mean, the draft is right around the corner, and it feels like it's all kind of going to hit us here next week. Something happened this week, I think, that affects the Bengals, and we'll get right into that with our first question in our mailbag, which is the Eagles extended DeVonta Smith yesterday. 3 years, $75 million, about $34 million guaranteed. This has obvious effects for the Bengals and T. Higgins. The Eagles are in a similar spot with A.J. Brown, that they have two wide receivers that they want to pay. They figure out a way to do it. We have a question from Steven here, Jay, that says, with DeVonta Smith's new contract coming in around $25 million a year, do you think the Bengals are going to revisit a T. Higgins extension and offer him a similar contract? Jay, do you think this is something, will this affect how the Bengals view the T. Higgins situation, or is this too different of a situation to try and compare the Eagles and Bengals?
I think it's a really similar, because you've got Jalen Hurts too, who just signed a massive deal. So you've got two top receivers, you got the top quarterback on a huge deal, but I don't think the Bengals are ever influenced by outside stimuli. It's they know what they want to do. They've got a value. So in that regard, I don't think the Smith deal has any bearing whatsoever. It's not so much about what T is worth. It's about, is it the right thing to do to pay two wide receivers top tier money and a quarterback? And I mean, yes, they would like to keep T Higgins here, but they would like it to be on a much more manageable salary than what he's looking for. And it just feels like this is, the swan song. I'd be really surprised if they ended up coming to an extension with them, whether it's this offseason, next offseason. I'd be even more surprised if they traded him. It just feels he kind of ruined his own bargaining power by saying, yeah, I plan on playing for Cincinnati this year. Maybe that's why they shut the interview down right after he said that. But I don't think anything that happens outside of Paycor Stadium affects the Bengals front office too much at all. They've got a plan. They stick to it. And right now, the plan is to let T play on the franchise tag. And we'll see after this year. But I'd be surprised if that plan includes trying to lock up him and Jamar in the same offseason.
It's interesting if you look at DeVonta Smith's stats and T. Higgins' stats on a per-game basis. They're almost identical from a per game, from receiving, from yards, from touchdowns, all that. The only thing is that DeVonta Smith has played about 200 more snaps over his career than T. Higgins, and DeVonta Smith has played one fewer season. So he's been far more available than T. Higgins has. So I think that's something DeVonta Smith had going for him. I agree that this is a similar situation, and this is something the Dolphins are looking at too. They're already paying Tyreek Hill $30 million. Jalen Waddle is up for an extension. There are a lot of teams around the NFL, I think, that are looking at this and saying, can we afford to pay two guys? I think the thing you have to look at that's different between the Eagles and the Bengals is that the Eagles do every single thing they can to wring every last dollar out of their salary cap. Mm-hmm. So they're using void years. They're using options. They're using restructures to push all the money they can to the forward. So Jalen Hurts' cap hit's very low. A.J. Brown's cap hit is very low. They're going to do everything they can to fit as many talented guys on their roster as they can. Ben Solak from The Ringer posted this yesterday. The Eagles are going to have the fourth highest paid quarterback, fourth highest paid running back, fourth highest paid receiver, fifth highest paid receiver, fifth highest paid tight end, fourth highest paid offensive tackle, fifth highest paid offensive tackle, and the highest paid offensive guard. The Bengals are never going to be in that realm. They have two guys who are among the top 10 at their position. Joe Burrow's number one among quarterbacks, obviously. Jay, you've given me tons of quizzes on this show. Do you have any guess who the other player is who is among their top 10 at their position on this Bengals roster? And I'll give you a hint. He is number 10 at his position. There's only one.
I get it. Trey Hendrickson?
It's not Trey. He just fell out. It's Logan Wilson. He is number 10 among off-ball linebackers. He's the only guy. The Bengals just don't do this. They're not trying to wring every last dollar. They're using more traditional contract structures. So that's a difference. The other difference is, the Eagles are probably planning for A.J. Brown to be off their roster or at least at a reduced cap hit by the time Devonta Smith's extension actually kicks in here in a couple of years. Bengals are in a different situation. They've got Ja'Marr Chase that still needs an extension. Mm-hmm. They don't have the runway that the Eagles have with two more years at cheap rates with Devonta Smith. The Bengals have T. Higgins 1 year left at a very high franchise tag salary. So there are differences, I think, that gave the Eagles advantages here. The Eagles are also having an advantage because they moved first like they always do. They got ahead of the market. They beat Justin Jefferson. They beat Ja'Marr Chase. They're setting the market that other teams are going to have to beat. I think there are similarities in terms of it's two highly paid receivers. How do you get it done? But from a perspective of how these teams are built, it's just easier for the Eagles to get this done than it's ever going to be for the Bengals to do.
Yeah. The Eagles spend like I did in college, just run up the credit card and worry about it later. And the Bengals are never going to be that way. They've said it, that they don't value 1 year more than another. There's never let's go for it this year and, you know, mortgage next year, mortgage 2 years down the road. It's just a different way of doing business. Fans can argue and debate whether it's the right thing to do, but you're never going to change it. That's the way they're going to operate. It's the way they've always operated. And you have to sit back and hope and trust that they know what they're doing. If you're a fan of this team, and just accept the constraints that they work within.
The other question we had on T was from Greg. Is there any buzz on trading T, and what would it take? I think at this point that ship is probably absolutely sailed. I mean, you mentioned to Jay that T kind of let the cat out of the bag and said he's comfortable playing here. I asked Jason Fitzgerald this question on his Over the Cap podcast last week, just to kind of get his take on it. He's a guy I really respect how he thinks about the NFL. He said the same thing, that he thinks T will play out this season, maybe a tag and trade in 2025. I still think that's the most likely scenario. As far as what it would take, I think it would take a first round pick at this point, maybe a top 40 pick where the Bengals could feel like they could get some sort of immediate replacement at wide receiver. Just don't see another team offering that at this point with the contract they have to give T. So any kind of notion that T is going to get moved at this point, I think we can probably put that to bed.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, not only is the ship sailed, it never even entered the port. It just always felt like a long shot. And, you know, yes, something crazy comes along, the Bengals will listen, but nobody's offering crazy at this point.
Let's move into free agency a little bit. This question is from Carson. Will the Bengals attempt a splashy move at any point? Or is this the kind of unsexy offseason where you shore up the trenches, you add depth, et cetera? That's pretty much what the Bengals did, I think, was do more of those solidifying moves and not try and go for the splashy moves. I think that time has probably come and gone. Yeah. The time for a splashy move. I mean, at this point in free agency, I guess they could have gone after Christian Wilkins to play defensive tackle. They could have signed Michael Weno to play right tackle. But I think just given how this free agency class lined up, it always seemed like taking more bites at the apple at lower cost contracts always seemed like it was kind of going to be the way to go. And that's just how it played out.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know what would qualify as splashy at this point. I mean, not that they would ever do it, but like a player like Odell Beckham Jr., I don't know. I don't know what, I guess we would have to ask from Carson what he would define as splashy. Now, I think one thing that would go beyond routine that could happen is a trade, a player for player trade, mid training camp, late training camp, something, you know, that we saw a few years ago. I know we had another question from Bengalman brother about this, about would they consider moving Dax Hill and kind of a similar move to the Billy Price for BJ Hill. And I think they would, if they draft a cornerback early who plays really well in training camp. And if DJ Turner is clearly better than Dax Hill, they would be so loaded in that secondary. It would almost not make sense to not try to see what you can get for him. The one caveat to that is when they traded Billy Price, another first round pick, he had already played three seasons. Two of them, he was pretty much a starter. I think he knew what he was at that point. I think the jury's still out on Dax, and maybe training camp is when the verdict is rendered. But he's only had 1 year as a starter. He still has 2 years left on a rookie deal. You know, do you want to pull the trigger that soon? I think they would have to really feel comfortable about what they landed in the draft and what they were seeing in camp. That's it. That's the only thing I could see that would even kind of qualify as flashy that they could do from this point on.
It'd be interesting if they kind of gave up on Dax at this point, because like you said, he's really got one season under his belt where he was able to show anything. I mean, you're giving up on a guy you took in a first round who's got 2 years plus a fifth year option on his contract. I mean, that's giving up pretty early. The two teams that I kind of looked at for the Saints or for Dax and Hill, one is the Saints. I just keep thinking the Saints would make a decent trade partner in a number of ways for the Bengals, but they're looking for a safety to play out alongside Tyrann Mathieu. I wonder if they'd be interested in doing some sort of trade. The other one I thought would be the Seattle Seahawks. They hired Mike McDonald as their head coach this offseason. Yeah. He coached Daxton Hill at Michigan. He likes having Daxton Hill. He had Kyle Hamilton in Baltimore, that kind of do-it-all safety. I wouldn't be surprised if Mike McDonald says, if we can get Daxton Hill at, I would guess, would be pennies on the dollar, why not do that? I don't really know what Daxton Hill would be worth at this point. I mean, certainly not a first, not a second. I'd be surprised if he could get a third. If it's a player for player thing, I don't know that Seattle has a ton of guys that the Bengals would want. The one guy I kind of thought was maybe they drafted a center in the fifth round last year named Olu Aluwatimi. You're trading a former first round pick for a guy who was chosen in the fifth round last year. You're really giving up on Dax Till at that point. Maybe they'd be interested in pursuing some interior offensive line depth like that. I don't really know. I'd still be surprised if they traded him, honestly. I guess if they took a first or second round corner, and you're right, they just have too many guys there that they see what they could get for him. But man, it would feel like giving up on him early without ever really giving him a true chance at what you want to see from him.
Right. And I mean, it's a nice, I don't know if you say ace to have in the pocket, but you know, injuries happen. And to have a guy like that, I mean, he wouldn't be happy to be on the bench this year, but to have that kind of depth at any of those positions, he could fill in at outside corner, slot, safety, wherever it might be. Yeah, that's why I think it's not quite apples and oranges, but it is a significantly different scenario than what Billy Price was, who he played one position and he had 3 years into his career. There, it didn't look like there was a lot of upside. I think this organization still has a lot of hope for Dax Hill's upside, and they just know it's on them to figure out where to put him to achieve that.
And you're going to have to get lucky to identify and acquire another BJ Hill type too. I mean, that was an extremely lucky good on the Bengals for identifying him and getting him and trading for him, but you're just not going to find a trade like that every day. That was such a valuable trade. You're going to have to get lucky to find that type of deal again. Let's continue with free agents here. These two questions are pretty similar, so let's stick these together from Matt. Did the Bengals have more money to spend? It just got conservative in free agency. They waited too long to get any DT besides Sheldon Rankins. They've been content to let the corner market whittle. Dalton Reisner, a guard, is still in the market. Why aren't the Bengals being more aggressive? And then from Houday, he wanted to know, are there usually good starters who are cut by teams after the draft? He's wondering if the Bengals can pick up any defensive or offensive line help, maybe a corner. So I think in these scenarios, I think there are players the Bengals could still go after. I don't necessarily think they got too conservative in free agency. I mean, I think they papered over a lot of their holes. I think Zach Moss, Mike Gesicki, Trenton Brown, Rankins, Geno Stone, Von Bell, you filled all your significant holes to the point where you can pretty much do what you want in the draft. I don't have any problem with that approach. We've talked in the past that maybe the Bengals could get a little more open to signing guys during the summer leading up to training camp. I think that Matt, who mentioned Dalton Reisner, that's a really good name to throw out there. I think if the Bengals don't draft a guy who can compete with Cordell Volson at left guard, maybe they could go after a guy like Dalton Reisner, a guy like Greg Van Roten, Lucas Patrick, Andres Pete. There are options out there. If they want to get a defender, Calais Campbell is out there. He's older, but if you want a guy to play on that defensive line, if they do want to take a relatively big swing, I think Stephon Gilmore might be literally the only guy out there who would qualify as like a big swing at this point, former defensive player of the year, but he's older. Maybe they could sign a Steven Nelson, a Levi Wallace at corner. So I think there are options out there that will be available. And you're right, Hude, who asked this. I think these will be after the draft because most teams at this point are like, Who are we going to get in the draft? What are our remaining needs going to be? And who can we get on the cheap once this entire process plays out? So I would not be surprised if they go after one of those kind of names that we mentioned once the draft is over.
Yeah. Hude's question, because he was wondering more about, you know, do players get cut after the draft? And Matt, yes, there's going to be guys available that are available right now. But teams typically don't cut players after. I mean, the roster limit's 90. And, you know, even if you draft a guy to be another guy's replacement, you still want that veteran to teach him the way, and there's some value there to have competition. Competition always works out well for the team. So I don't think you're going to see guys getting cut after the draft that the Bengals would be interested in. It'd be more so on that final cut down day after the final preseason game. They will absolutely be looking at the waiver wire then to see if there's anybody they can grab. And as far as waiting too long to spend in free agency, you know, I'm with you. This seemed like a predictable free agency cycle for them, where you knew what positions they were going to get. You knew some of the players they were going to get. They went and got them. The having money thing, they always have money because they like to roll it over. They don't view, you know, if you look it over the cap and it says they have $25 million, The Bengals see that more as $12.5 million. They always have this money allocated for contingencies and emergencies that a lot of other teams don't worry about. And it's like if you walk into Arby's one day and you have $100 in your pocket, are you going to pay $20 for that Arby's sandwich when the day before you only had $5 and you spent all five of it on that sandwich? They have value on guys, and That value doesn't change based on how much money they have. So I don't think that it was a case of being too conservative. I think maybe the only conservative part of free agency was how they handled DJ Reader, where I think maybe they thought no other team was going to be willing to pony up and give him a huge deal with him still not being able to pass a physical and still being a few months away from being fully healthy. And they got burned on it. It only takes one team, and that's all. Well, the Detroit Lions said, we're willing to do it. And the Bengals really didn't have any meaningful talks, according to DJ. And so I think maybe that's where they got conservative. But as far as who they targeted elsewhere, it all felt predetermined. There was not a lot of surprise in this cycle.
One other question along those same lines is from Tony. From someone who is neither an accountant nor an NFL GM. Well, that makes two and three of us here. I keep hearing the Bengals are sitting on extra cash. Why not just move forward some of the Burrow money to make future years a bit easier? Well, we talked a little bit before about the Bengals not being aggressive with moving money into the future. This would be kind of the opposite of that, moving money into the present to make the future years a little earlier. I guess first I would say they're not sitting on a ton of extra space. Over the Cap says they have $23.6 million in cap space. Like you just said, Jay, they love to roll money over that they can do. They like to have contingencies. Still got to sign their rookie class. They want to have money stashed for practice squad guys, for injured reserve guys, maybe an extension down the road. And they like to have money on top of all that. So there's some money, but it's not like they're sitting on a, you know, hoard of cash here. Technically, they could move some money into this season for Burrow. Sure, they could do that if they wanted to. But you don't really see NFL teams do that too often. It would be like you're borrowing it like at a low interest rate. The NFL salary cap is going to keep rising. There's really no reason to put a bunch of money in that current year. Teams like to build these contracts that escalate as the salary cap does. So I just don't see the Bengals of all teams. I don't see the Bengals choosing to pay more money now when they don't have to.
And it's not even that much of a question of philosophy. It is practicality. That Burrow contract was meticulously negotiated and structured. It just to rip it up 7 months later and restructure it, it just that doesn't make a lot of sense. whichever way you go, backloading it, front loading, however you want to move it around, they constructed it the way they did. And I'm talking about they being the Bengals and they being Burrow and his people for a reason. And yeah, it just wouldn't make sense to, even if they were in cap hell right now and they needed to do something, that wouldn't make much sense to redo a deal like that so quickly.
And there are rules too, that the NFL has to prevent you from front loading too much. I think it's the 50% rule, where your cap charge in year one has to be at least 50% of the cap charge in year two. So you can't just front load a contract and get it all out of the way. The 49ers got into some trouble with this with the Jimmy Garoppolo deal a few years ago, and other teams have kind of gotten in trouble with this. So the NFL has built in rules to prevent that. Let's turn the page of the draft here, Jay. Like I said, one week away, 1 week and a couple days until the draft. This one's from Levi to kind of start us off on the draft. How big is the Bengals' week 18 win right now, in a bad way? So what Levi's talking about is, what spot would the Bengals be in had they lost that week 18 game? Should teams start throwing week 18 to improve their draft capital? Jay, your thoughts?
Well, we'll know in 9 days how big it is, because whoever gets selected at 14, 15, 16, and 17 are the guys they will be missing out on. They probably would have picked 14th had they lost that game. There's a couple other teams that they were tied with at 9 and 8, and they're picking behind them because they had the stronger strength of victory, and that would have been the case as well. With the teams they were tied with at 8 and 9, so that 14 is, I'm pretty sure that's where they would have picked. You know, throwing games, I don't know. It's kind of the same way as the Bengals' philosophy is, you know, you never sell out one for down the road. It means too much to these guys. An organization can kind of tank by the way they structure a roster, but players and coaches, it's really hard to not give your all in this game. You're going to get hurt. Bad things are going to happen. And that game meant something to the Bengals. It cost them 4 draft picks, but that stain of going 0-6 in the division was something that they were adamant. They did not want that. The winning record, 9-8, 8-9 doesn't seem like a lot. It is nice to say 3 straight winning seasons. That wasn't as much as avoiding the 0-6 mark. And everybody can say, yeah, well, you're playing the backup Browns, and you were, but that doesn't matter as far as internally how they view themselves as avoiding an 0-6 finish. That would have been really, if embarrassing is the right word, maybe it would have been to some of them embarrassing. Mm. But I have no problem with the way they handled that game. Especially Joe Mixon kind of getting to go out on top. Everything that went into that game, I wouldn't have done anything different.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely could have an effect. I mean, they could have been ahead of the Saints, who might take an offensive tackle at 14. They could have been ahead of the Seahawks at 16, who very well could take an offensive tackle or guard. So it could have an effect. I mean, maybe they miss out on, I don't know how the Bengals have these guys ranked, but maybe they miss out on Talese Fuaga and end up with Amarius Mims when they could have had the reverse. We don't really know. I mean, we're never really know how it would have turned out if the Bengals would have been a little earlier in the first round. But I mean, you've seen a team do this. The Eagles did this in the final game of 2020. I mean, they basically threw their last game. It helped them get the 6th pick in the 2021 draft. And then that they traded
Devonta
down.
Smith, right?
I was going to say it circled back, and they ultimately got Devonta Smith. It all comes full circle. So it's, you've seen teams do this in the past, but you're right. I think there's just too much on the line for the coaches, for the players. Obviously, it's the game film is their resume. They're not going to tank it. It's, you're right. It's an organizational decision more than an on-field decision. I'm not against like targeted one game tanking like the Eagles did to get a better draft position. I'm not. And if the Bengals had done that, and I guess you never come out and say you're doing that, but you could almost make it obvious. Like I remember the Eagles doing in that game, you make it kind of obvious what's going on. I wouldn't have been against it, but I also understand what you're saying, Jay, that there are these kind of intangible factors, right? That maybe it's easy for me to say at home behind my computer, oh yeah, throw the game, get a couple extra move up in the draft, the first round. It's easy for me to say. It's harder for the guys on the field to do that, and for that to be the way you go out in the season and end 0-6 in the division. There's a lot of intangible things, I think, that maybe me at home specifically that I'm not thinking of, instead of just saying, oh, you're getting 4 better positions of draft position. So I think that's a good point to make.
There's also that evil darkness lurking in every shadow now with the betting angle. And you start
very good point
tanking games and things like that. It's gonna pique some interest from some very important people.
That's a very, very good point. Next question here from Steven. How would you feel if the Bengals went cornerback in the first round? I guess I wouldn't be surprised at this point just because the Bengals love taking cornerbacks, but I feel like you're pretty well set with Cam Taylor, Britt, and DJ Turner and Mike Hilton as your starters. You've got DJ Turner as depth. I think you could pick a cornerback at some point. I just don't know that it needs to be in the first round. I think there's only really two guys I think the Bengals would even consider at 18, and that's Terrion Arnold from Alabama and Quinyon Mitchell from Toledo. I think even then there's some debate on whether either of these guys is going to be a true impact contributor at the NFL level. Yeah. For me, I think it could just be overkill. I really do. I think you could. There's too much opportunity cost of not going with other positions that are bigger needs, both immediate and long term, where you could just kind of hold off till day two, maybe even day three before you add another cornerback. I don't think round one is the way to go.
Yeah, I'd be mildly surprised. You know, like you said, the history is there, but I this draft class doesn't suggest it. I think it would tell us exactly how they feel about Dax Hill if they went that early on a cornerback. And if they wait really late, then you get the sense that they are feeling good about what they're going to do with Dax Hill and what he's going to become. I don't know, tackle, defensive tackle, wide receiver. I think those are locks to, they're going to have one, at least one of each of those by the time they get to Saturday. What they do with that fourth pick, I think cornerback is at the top of the list, but there's a lot of different directions it could go. So first round, yeah, I wouldn't be stunned, but I would be mildly surprised just based on need and based on what this cornerback class is.
Another question along those same lines from Houday. What position other than quarterback or specialist would you be most unenthused about the Bengals picking in rounds 1 through 3? I mean, I think there's some obvious ones here. I mean, the Bengals are not going to select a linebacker in the first three rounds. Like, that's just not going to happen. The Bengals are not going to select a safety in the first three rounds. I guess they could take a running back in the first three rounds, but I'd be pretty unenthused if that happened.
Yeah.
I think they could wait on that.
I had safety or running back. I would get linebacker if it was a good fit. They are still a little thin at that position. And, you know, with the new kickoff rule it wouldn't stun me to see them do that. But safety and running back were the two I had. Just running back being what it is, and you got Zach Moss, you got Chase Brown. I don't know. And safety, I mean, they're so loaded right now. They're moving a first round pick. So I just can't see them going and getting another one of those. And it's not just first round, but any of those first three rounds, those two positions primarily would leave me unenthused.
This one's from Luke G. Which nose tackle do you see the Bengals favoring in this draft? I mean, this has been something we've talked about a lot, and it's an interesting question. You know, are the Bengals, is this something they're going to prioritize after losing DJ Reader, and how high are they going to prioritize it? How high do they value kind of that bigger body, that guy who's primarily a run stopper, but can maybe add something as a pass rusher? I know Tavondre Sweat, we talked about his off-field stuff last week, and there's a lot of off-field stuff there. Depending on how far he falls, I still think he's got to be in consideration. He is kind of the perfect replacement for DJ Reader. He's really the only one of these big body nose tackles that I feel really has any pass rush productivity in him that could really be a contributor. If he's there at the back end of the third, if he falls that far, I really do think he could be in consideration. A couple other guys like McKinley Jackson, I've mentioned him in a couple mocks that we've done. Like, he's fallen a little farther in my eyes, just some of the age-adjusted production stuff that I've seen. He's a little farther down. But there are a lot of mid and late-round guys, I think. Justin Rogers, FAUDT Evan Anderson, Jordan Jefferson from LSU, Christian Boyd from Northern Iowa. These are all guys who I think are going to go on day three for the most part, who – you know, you're not going to get a DJ Reader right off the bat. You're hoping they could become that at some point. And so it's a good question. I do wonder where the nose tackle need fits in the Bengals' priority and how early they're willing to take that position.
Yeah. And as far as, like, you know, specifically to the question who they favor, I think Sweat is the one everyone favors. He's just clear and above the best one in this class. The question is, what does the DUI or the OVI or however they labeled it on the arrest report, what does that do? And I think – I don't know if the Bengals would fall in this category, but I think some teams maybe yes, it's a red flag, but see it as, well, better to get it out of the way now and hope he learns from it than have it be a Rashee Rice situation where you're counting on the guy and he's already under contract to you and something crazy happens. And I know Rashee wasn't drunk, but, you know, just a violation like that, you wonder if you've done your homework on a guy and you feel like it's a solid character person who made a single mistake, there is kind of that notion of better to get it out of the way now and he's going to learn from it and going to be an exemplary employee moving forward. It's a risk. It's a lot to bank on a young person who made that kind of mistake. But I think Sweat is still, even with the legal issue, still the best available. It's just a matter of where people are going to have him slide. Would he be in play for the Bengals at 49? Even with that, I don't know, but like you said, if they get to that first pick in the third round, their first pick in the third round, and he's still around, I think you got to roll the dice.
This one's from Patrick. Is there a top 30 visit that you could see the Bengals reaching for in the second round? Jay, you've been tracking all the top 30 visits on PFN. I don't know if there's a guy in the second round that they would reach for. Is there a guy that stands out to you among their visits you think they could reach for on day two?
I mean, Sweat is a visit, and he's projected to go in round two. I guess, again, I would like to get some clarity. When Patrick says reaching, does he mean a guy that everybody else has is like a third or fourth round, but the Bengals really liked him on the visit, and they're gonna roll the dice and reach for him? Or does he mean reaching just like I'm reaching for my glass of water right now, just a regular verb? I think Mason Smith is really in another defensive tackle, but more of a three tech. But he's another one that's kind of in that second, third round range that could make sense there. Most of the guys they've brought in are the tackles that are going to go in the first round, and then these later like 5, 6, 7 preferred free agent kind of guys. So I don't see, other than Mason Smith or Tavondre Sweat, a top 30 visit landing with the Bengals in the second round.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean, I think a couple of the guys that I just mentioned, Justin Rogers and Evan Anderson, reportedly visited those, but those are late round guys. I mean, Washington wide receiver Jalen McMillan reportedly also took a visit. I'm not sure if that's been entirely confirmed, but maybe he's a guy you reach for in round two, but I think he's more round three.
Three or four, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, I think he's a guy you can probably wait on. So, yeah, I don't know if there's going to be a reach necessarily, but wouldn't be surprised if they end up drafting one of these guys they met with, of course. This one's from Luke. If Joe Burrow tells the Bengals, go get me Brock Bowers, if he drops to 18 or somewhere close to there, would that make a difference? Luke says it's widely accepted that Joe Burrow wanted Ja'Marr Chase in 2021 instead of Penei Sewell. Do you think Joe Burrow would like to get another weapon, especially with T. Higgins looking like he'll be off this roster? I think the Bengals would certainly take Joe's opinion into account, but I think they're still going to do what's best for the roster, regardless of what Joe wants. I mean, if they think an offensive tackle is the best way to go, they'll do it. If they think Brock Bowers is the best way to go, they'll do it. I don't think that they think Brock Bowers is the best way to go. So even if Joe Burrow is saying he really wants Brock Bowers, I think the Bengals would still say, thank you for your opinion, Joe, but we're going to go with a different direction.
Yeah. Burrow makes suggestions, not demands. So it's like, I can't see him being, oh, you go get this guy. Like he could have been like waffling on Ja'Marr Chase. They were still going to draft Ja'Marr Chase. That was a no brainer. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know how much Joe values the tight ends. He probably sees it the same way the rest of us see it, where he can make any tight end a really good tight end and get him paid. Mm-hmm. And so first of all, I keep saying this, but any Bowers decision, I think, is moot. I'd be stunned if he falls to 18. He's that good. And I know the positional value of tight ends in the first round, it doesn't happen all that often, but just the kind of things you can do with him, I don't think it's going to be an issue. And I don't think Burrow would be in position or has been saying, go get that guy. I'm sure he knows what the offense is. He knows what the offense needs. But I'd be surprised if they land him. I'd be surprised if Burrow, you know, pounded the table for him. It's a fun discussion, but it's pretty much moot.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't even see him getting to 18. I could see him going to the Jets at 10. I think his floor is probably 15 to the Colts. I don't see him getting to the Bengals in any capacity. Last one on the draft. This is a quick one from Dale. How would you rank these prospects for the Bengals? Troy Fitanu, Talese Fuaga, J.C. Latham, Amarius Mims, Byron Murphy, Brock Bowers. I'll just give my quick. This is just off the top of my head. I would put these for the Bengals. Fuaga, Latham, Mims, Fitanu. So all the tackles first, and then I would go Byron Murphy and then Brock Bowers last. I don't know, Jay, if you have, what's your order on those guys?
I flipped Latham and Fuaga. Latham was my one. Fuaga was my two. I had again, the verbiage. If ranking them in terms of how good they are, I mean, maybe Bowers is number one, but ranking them in terms of best fit for the Bengals. Yeah. Then I've got Bowers last on that list. I got Murphy three. I got him ahead of Fitanu. And ahead of Mims. I just think there's a lot of question marks there about the lack of playing time. Ian Cummings is talking about the crazy upside that Mims has. You're not drafting guys in first round for their upside. You're drafting them for what you expect them to be. So I still lean towards Latham, but Fuag is a very close second.
Feels like Latham is like hitting a double, whereas Mims is going for the home run.
Yeah.
And I feel like the Bengals need the double now. I really do. So that I'm kind of on the same page with you. A couple more questions here. Actually, more than a couple more questions. This one is from Brian. Is it a lock that Jackson Carmen is gone if the Bengals take a tackle in round one or two? And how much salary cap would that save if they get rid of Jackson Carmen? Let's take the second part first. None of Jackson Carmen's base salary is guaranteed. So if they cut him or trade him, it's the same either way. They'd have about $700,000 in dead money, but they'd save about $1.67 million cap and cash. Both of those would be saved. And like I said, if he's traded, same exact thing. Bengals have kept 10 offensive linemen in three straight years. I know that thanks to Mr. Jay Morrison's spreadsheet of the Bengals roster by years. So I would not say it's a lock that he's gone, even if the Bengals take a tackle in round one. I mean, you'd have your starting five. You'd have the round one tackle. You'd have Cody Ford. That's seven guys. Still need three more, probably. I don't think that there's anybody else on this offensive line depth chart that would be guaranteed to make the roster over Jackson Carmen. I think he'd be competing with Trey Hill, with Dante Smith, Jackson Kirkland, Nate Gilliam. If they draft an interior guy before round five, that guy's obviously going to make the roster too. So that would be one other guy that would make the roster. But I don't think it's a lock that Jackson Carmen is gone. I know he's struggled his entire career here. I know a lot of fans are kind of fed up with him, but teams need an offensive lineman, and the Bengals don't have a ton of better options that I would say are definitively better than Jackson Carmen is the way I would put it. So I don't think it's a lock that he's gone by any means.
No, I almost think it's a long shot. Is the savings are so minimal. You know, say what you want about maybe the Bengals overdrafted him where they did. He still was projected to be third round type of talent. You don't want to give up on a position that is so lacking in the league right now. Everybody's looking for tackles, and even if he doesn't make your 53, I mean, is a team going to claim him off waivers? I don't know how likely that is. And you can bring him back on the practice squad and he sticks around that way. I think it's a long shot that he's here in 2025. But there's just depth is too important at that position. And just drafting a tackle. Now, if the tackle comes in and plays gangbusters and maybe beats out Trent Brown, then yeah, maybe they move on from Carmen. But I think he plays this out. It's the final year of his deal. And you know, if they hadn't cut him by now, if it was a lot of shenanigans going on and if he wasn't pulling his weight and doing the kind of things he was supposed to be doing, I think maybe they would have released him by this point. But it's just been more about not being able to win competitions in camp, not being able to produce when called upon. And they still see that upside. They still see that potential. And they don't want to cut bait until they know for sure that it's not a possibility. So I see him sticking around one more year, regardless of who they draft.
I mean, still hanging on to that upside from that Bills playoff game. I mean, he played well in that game. I mean, you've seen it can be done. Yeah. It can be done. I submitted a trade or talked about a trade earlier this year. We're sending Carmen to the Saints for Kalen Saunders, who's a defensive tackle. I still think that could be an option, maybe, if the Saints need offensive tackle help. A listener named Steve-O proposed sending Carmen to the Saints for Trevor Penning, who is also an offensive tackle. Don't think that one's likely, Steve-O, unfortunately. Trevor Penning was a first-round pick. He's younger. He's got 2 years and a fifth-year option left in his contract. Carmen has 1 year left. Trevor Penning has struggled. The Saints might be ready to move on, but that's not the type of deal I think the Saints would make.
No, the Bengals would. The Bengals would run.
The Bengals would, absolutely. Absolutely, yes. Similar vein here from T. Willie. Which of the following are on the Bengals roster in week one? Jackson Carmen, Donte Smith, Cody Ford, Trey Hill. I don't think this is just one of them. I think this could be a multiple choice, Jay. I mean, who do you have out of these four?
I think Cody Ford's a lock. I mean,
for sure.
They re-signed him this year. He instantly, as soon as they put on the pads in training camp last year, took over that swing tackle job. They like him a lot as a backup tackle, and he can also play guard. So I think he's the most likely to be here. Second most likely, someone, Carmen and Hill. I mean, Hill hasn't done anything, but they don't have a lot of backup in the interior. And, they must still see some potential in Trey Hill. They drafted him. So based on need, I think he might be slightly ahead of Carmen, but I put those two pretty close. And then, I think the end might be here for Donte Smith.
Yeah, agreed. I've got the exact same order. I would be surprised if the Bengals 10 offensive linemen is not something like they're starting five, Cody Ford, round one tackle, Jackson Carmen, Trey Hill, and then like a mid-round interior backup that they take in round three through five or something like that. Or if they don't end up with that interior guy, they go out and sign a Dalton Reisner or a Greg Van Roten and they add a veteran into that mix. I think that's what you're looking at for your 10 guys, assuming they go with 10 as they did the past 3 years. This one's from Brian. When is the Evan McPherson extension coming? I mean, we've all got eyes on T. Higgins, on Jamar Chase, but let's not forget Evan McPherson. He's out there. He's due for money. Is this something that's going to happen? Are the Bengals going to go out and pay their kicker? I would think they would.
Yeah, it makes too much sense. I mean, you look at the top 10 kickers right now. They're all, seven of them are on 4 year deals. Three of them are on five year deals. They're all making an average annual salary of $4 to $6 million. It's like a template. It's just a matter of when you're going to pull the trigger. So July 15th comes. Is unlikely as the T. Higgins extension is, it goes away completely then. And then the start of the regular season comes, and the whatever minimal chance there is of Jamar being extended this offseason goes away, not by rule, but just kind of by practice. They don't typically do those big extensions. The last time the Bengals extended a kicker was Randy Bullock, and they did it in week two in 2018. Kind of the same thing. You get to that point, you get past the deadlines with the bigger guys, and then you say, okay, we're gonna do this now. So maybe Evan comes between July 15th and the start of the regular season, or maybe it's right after the start of the regular season, but they know what that money's gonna be pretty much. They know what the structure is gonna be. It doesn't make sense to not get it done. So I would say that we will probably see him extended at some point in 2024.
You think he'll be the highest paid kicker? I mean, Jake Elliott and Justin Tucker are at $6 million a year. As you mentioned, 4 year contract, 6 years, $24 million. Could McPherson hit $6.25 million, $6.5 million? I think it's possible. I think the cap increase helps here too, because the cap is going up by so much that maybe you're saying, oh, well, we can afford to pay a specialist like Evan McPherson. We can afford to make him the top paid at his position. I wouldn't be surprised if they hit the top of the market when they eventually do this deal.
Yeah, and do you want to dick around with that much of a dollar value? I mean, he is one of the best kickers. He's been so important to this team. He's changed the way they call plays when they get on the plus side of the 50. He could, if that's what he's demand, if he wants to be the top paid kicker, I could see the Bengals maybe negotiating a little bit and trying to get concessions elsewhere. But it wouldn't surprise me to see him be the guy, the highest paid guy.
This next question is from Governor Chief. How is DJ Ivy's recovery going? DJ Ivy is kind of like the forgotten man. You know, we're talking about all this cornerback depth and whether they're going to Bengals will take a round one or round two corner. DJ Ivy's still on this roster. He tore his ACL on December 16th. So that kind of gives you the timeline of where his recovery is going. I don't know if we've heard anything, Jay, on how his recovery is going, but I mean, I think you have to at least, I don't know how much you factor him into the cornerback equation. I mean, it's a late round pick coming off an ACL in his rookie season. I'm not sure how much you can really factor him into anything at this point. If anything, he's like a luxury. He's icing on top of the cake if he comes back and plays. I don't know if we've heard anything about how he's doing in his recovery or not.
Yeah, Zach was asked about him yesterday, and he said him and Tyson Anderson are in the facility every single day doing the rehab. Both are coming along great. But you're right. You're talking about a December ACL. That's, you know, best case scenario, September. And you know, we saw it with Awuzie, where sometimes those guys – with a lot of cutting and planning, it takes a little longer. He is kind of a luxury as a cornerback, but he was really coming on as far as special teams go. And that's how he got hurt, was playing special teams. So I think we will see him back in action at some point this year. I don't know. It's going to be week one. That's a quick turnaround from a December 16th ACL.
Yeah. Maybe a pop list guy to start the season. I would think that stash on that list. Let's see. With the new, this one's from Governor Chief as well. With the kickoff rule change, who are some players you think will be in the running for kick returner? We've talked about the kickoff rules a little bit, Jay, a couple weeks ago in this episode. I think the Bengals have some guys on their roster who could do that. Charlie Jones returned a lot of kicks at Purdue in college. I think he's got to be the number one guy still, but there are other people on this team that could do it. Trevion Williams, Chase Brown, Trent Irwin has done it. Chris Evans, if he's still on this roster come week one, I think could do it. And then I think that maybe they target a guy in the draft, maybe in the late rounds, wide receiver or something, or specifically a guy who's good, or running back who's good in the return game and who they feel like could really excel with these new rules. So I think Charlie Jones has to be the kind of the leader in the clubhouse, but I wouldn't be surprised if they add a guy in the draft who's really, really good at specifically returning on kickoffs.
Yeah, because they drafted Charlie to be the heir apparent to Tyler Boyd in the slot. I don't know that he's proven that yet. I think there's still a good chance that whoever they draft on Thursday or Friday of the draft is going to be an inside-outside guy that can play a lot in the slot. Now you've got Gesicki to play a lot of slots, so that does free Charlie Jones up. You know, Chase Brown, we asked him about it yesterday, and it was – I don't know. It wasn't – I'm not doing that, but it was, you know, whatever they want me to do kind of thing. And it didn't sound like he was gung ho, and he is going to have a much larger role as a running back. And it was returning a kickoff in practice where he injured his hamstring and had to go on IR last year. So Darren Simmons made an important point where, you know, you need these guys. I made a mistake here. You guys can all make fun of me. I forgot to plug in my laptop and it's about to die. So you can care. I'm going to grab, we're almost done, but I want to make it to the end. I'm going to grab my power cord.
All right. We've only got one question left here. So we'll take this one while Jay is getting his power cord there. This one, these are our last two questions we have that I kind of put together. This one's from Bengals United. He says, how much change do you think we're going to see with the Bengals offense this season? And then a similar question from Mark, who said, with the success that Jake Browning had under center last year as the Bengals starter, what would Joe Burrow say about whether it's changed his opinion in any meaningful way about this offense? So this is a good question because I think there will be some changes to this Bengals offense in 2023. I think it's just for one part of it is just the natural evolution of this offense of this Bengals staff has been, you know, pretty continuous for a long time for Zach Taylor's entire run here. That's changing. You know, Dan Pitcher's replacing Brian Callahan, offensive coordinator. Brad Crabthorpe is moving into the assistant quarterback job. Freddie Knighton was promoted to assistant QB. Justin Riscotti is here as the passing game coordinator. The first time the Bengals have ever had a passing game coordinator on their offensive staff. Just Jordan Salkins here as an offensive assistant. I think all of that kind of combined will have to bring naturally some new ideas to this offense. What that's going to look like, I think that's still up for debate. Jay, you're back with us here.
Rookie mistake by the 57-year-old.
Okay. It's all right. It was weird. I felt kind of strange out in the limb on my own there for a second. It was very, very weird. So we're just talking about how much this Bengals offense could change next season. We talked about all the new coaches the Bengals have brought in, the new ideas that the Bengals might have. I think there will be some differences, and what that looks like remains to be seen. But as Mark mentioned, I think more under center stuff was happening even before Joe Burrow went down. I think he was helping get the running game going a little bit more. You've got more flexibility in your running game from under center. You can attack both sides of the line. You can run more traditional play action and stuff like that. I wouldn't be surprised if we see more two tight end sets moving forward next year with no Tyler Boyd. You're going to see, you know, you're going to be playing 12 personnel with Mike Gesicki, which really means you're probably playing 11 personnel because Mike Gesicki is more of a slot receiver. But it's going to be a different sort of look, I think, than let's line up in 11 personnel 98% of the time, like the Bengals have been doing for the past 4 or 5 years. I think you will see, if it's just tweaks or wholesale changes, I think you will see some differences that will be a little bit noticeable next year.
Yeah, the big thing for me is Zach always talked about how him and Brian kind of shared a brain and they saw things exactly the same way. And now Dan Pitcher's going to bring a fresh perspective to this. And you know, I don't know if creativity is the right word, but you just to try some new things and put in some new motions and some of these plays that other teams are leaning into. And we saw it last year where they really started moving Jamar. We actually went back to that Buffalo game, the playoff game. They really started moving Jamar Chase around. I think that could be turbocharged this year. Mm-hmm. If the wide receiver they draft has inside outside capability, and now you've got Gesicki can be, he's not best in line, but he can play in line. Then he plays in the slot. You've got receivers you can move over the place. You've got Chase in the backfield. And I think that's what might look the most different is just kind of a where's Waldo situation with Jamar Chase. Is where is he on every single play? Not necessarily to confuse the defense, because you see where he's at, but just to stress the defense, like, oh, we weren't expecting that, and now they've got to adjust how they're playing it. So I think that's a big part of it. And then I think, you know, they talked last year about they wanted to go under center more, and then the Burrow calf injury happened, and that kind of threw that out the window. So I would think that's on the table again as well.
I think it's a great point about Jamar. Just the gravity of Jamar as a receiving threat, I think, moving him around can help you dictate coverages, can help, I think, confuse the defense is a good way to put it. It puts them on their toes. If you don't know where Jamar is going to be on every play, if he's moving around, just his mere threat of him being in different spots, I think, is going to enough to dictate coverages and get matchups that you want in the passing game. So I think that's a really good point. That is our last question. Thank you guys so much for all these questions. I think we wouldn't have been able to do this without all you guys submitting great questions about all these different topics. We will definitely have to do this again down the road, do another draft maybe this summer, or another mailbag, not draft. I've got draft on the brain here. Another mailbag this summer or approaching the regular season. But thank you to everyone who submitted a question this week. Jay, anything else before we sign off here? We've got one more episode before the draft next week. We'll talk about all the latest news, rumors, updates, anything that comes in before next week. And then after that, the big show, the draft, we'll cover everything that happens. So anything before we sign off for this episode, Jay?
Yeah, the next time we do one of these, you don't feel like you guys have to be pigeonholed into Bengals questions. I mean, bring some Arby's questions, bring some stats questions. I love stats questions. I love looking up stats. Bring some music questions. Dallas is a huge movie fan. Bring some movie questions. We can have some fun and not just stick to the basics of Bengals. I enjoy it. I would hope you guys would enjoy doing that as well. So loosen up. Let's have some fun.
And that's probably on me, because I did say in my tweets Bengals related questions. So I'll take the blame for that one. But so that's on me. But yes, please, you're right. Please do anything. We'll answer any questions, anything you want to throw at us. We'll take it. So, yes, thank you guys all again for those questions. We will be back next week to talk about the draft. So until then, thank you for listening and watching to the PFN Bengals podcast.